Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
I'm in the Hall of Fame? Oh, Michael is. Welcome into the Savage Nation. Greetings from Music Row in Music City, USA, Nashville. I'm Michael DelGiorno, honored once again to be filling in for Dr. Savage. Our phone number throughout the show, 855-400-7282, 855-400-SAVAGE. To follow along with all the stories we're covering and even those we may not get around to getting to, you can sign up for or sign in to the Savage newsletter at michaelsavage.com, and debuted at number one. Moving up three big notches this week, get a hold of Dr. Savage's newest bestseller, Trump's War, His Battle for America. I use an expression all the time, and it's a great stage setter. I'm going to elaborate a little bit more before I lay out a very, very compelling circumstantial case and trend that is happening in America. But I always say behind every headline is a story. And behind every story, there's so much to talk about. Why do I say that? Because we live in a culture right now of immediate everything, fast everything. We're guilty mostly of our priorities in life that leads to our lack of time. So if you've ever watched My 600-Pound Life on cable, these people have literally dug their grave with their teeth. They are literally eating themselves to death. And they so can't control themselves that their only hope is a gastric bypass surgery. We're literally going to take portions of their stomach or tie a knot and take a normal-sized stomach, let alone an enlarged one of an obese person, and make it about the size of a fist or less. And so these people can literally, they can only eat like a couple of teaspoons of something at a time. And that's kind of how it is with information today. We got like a bunch of people that have had understanding bypass surgery. And they think that they can understand the world and life without taking the time to really understand or really study. And so we live in a headline world, and headline people are very easy to manipulate. But if you have historic context, if you have civic context, if you have current event context, if facts still matter, they paint a far different picture. Now, there's several things that circumstantially I'm going to lay out for you today. And they're all relevant, quite frankly. I mean, out of everything that I'm going to show you, probably the one that I scratch my head the most over are journalists. Because immediately with this Susan Rice story, immediately comes out CNN last night and MSNBC to tell you there's nothing to see here. Keep moving. So I want to share the debate of global warming as an example of how this works. When they can't win an argument or win a day or a conversation with facts, they just end the argument, which is what they're trying to do. But don't you ever just scratch your head and say, that goes against everything that a journalist is. What journalist would do that? What journalist would not follow facts, would not go to the story? You know, I often say, the man of the year last year was not Donald Trump. It was the hacker. The hacker who had to hack to do the job for the hack journalists that wouldn't do theirs. But what happened to journalists that hear a fact and they don't have a side? They just want a story. And right away, they're out to defend a narrative rather than follow facts to a truth. I often say, when you look at even the IRS scandal, it's far worse than Watergate ever was. And it was clearly done with the intent to control the outcome of an election. So why didn't it lead to somebody waving goodbye at a helicopter like it did for Nixon? And I point to the condition of America, the lack of character. We don't tell the truth, so I guess we don't expect our leaders to tell the truth. We don't live with great moral judgment and character, so I guess we don't expect our leaders to. But it also has something to do with a very biased, dishonest middleman, journalists. I don't think Woodward and Bernstein were driven by their love for George McGovern over Richard Nixon as they were the truth in a story. Now, the great irony of this story with Susan Rice is it doesn't come from deep throat in a garage in Georgetown. It doesn't come from the intelligence community. It comes from the media that's been holding the story to protect Obama. Trust me, I'm going to time release all of this, but just follow my analogy. You see, I don't believe in coincidence. I don't think it's a coincidence I'm filling in for Dr. Savage today. I don't think it's a coincidence you're listening right now. Whether you're stuck in traffic, whether you're stuck at home, whether you're sneaking a listen when you should be working, whatever. There's no place I'd rather be today. There's no one I'd rather be talking to than you. And I want to lay this case out in a way that nobody else playing a narrative tug of war would even attempt to. You know why? Because I'm not into narratives and I'm nobody's shill. I only care about facts and I only care about arriving at the truth. And when I have people say, look the other way, I start looking. When I have people say, trust me, and there's some people that use that as an expression, so I'll give them a free pass. But for the most part, trust can't be asked for. Trust is earned. Trust is proven. And earned through proven. So people that say, trust me all the time, make me the most suspicious. And so what do we have the mainstream media saying? Trust me, there's nothing here. This is just a battle of narratives. And if they can get you, whether you're on the left or on the right, to believe that this is just a battle of narratives, this is just a consequence of a divided States of America. Of a very splintered and separate America that's at odds. They've won. They want you to buy it's a narrative war so that you never pursue the facts. I was once laying out just another segment on the radio. And I happened to be getting ready to interview in my particular town the most famed defense attorney. This guy's good. This one woman went and shot her husband and killed him. Didn't even deny doing it. And he got her off. I mean, this guy's good. And I think if I remember correctly, I was interviewing him over his latest defendant, which was a judge that was masturbating while on the bench and presiding over cases using a pump. It was a crazy story. But he happened to just be in studio early for his interview, and I was laying out a case. Because I very much believe, this is why I respect Dr. Savage. I actually believe we're in the courtroom of public opinion right now. I actually believe that this is talk radio, a last bastion of truth in America for those who have ears to hear. For those that have a big enough mental stomach to eat more than a bite at a time. So I finish my thing, yada, yada. I hit my microphone off, say, how you doing? And he's looking at me with a strange look, and he goes, do you know, you just laid out a textbook courtroom opening argument. I mean, I went to very prestigious schools. It would be our wildest hope that we could teach and instruct somebody to perform like that in a courtroom. And I gave him a very nonchalant, very truthful answer. You know, I think I would have been a great trial attorney. I just didn't want to go to that much school. I guess I found my way to do it after all. Now, if I were a trial attorney, I don't think I'd be in defense, even though that's where the money is. Now, that's the good news about radio. Radio is the prosecution business, but that's where the money is. And I can tell you this from the bottom of my heart. If I had become an attorney, and if I were in courtrooms, I wouldn't want the easy, evidentiary, backed up by science, forensics. I mean, anybody can bring you a murder weapon. Anybody can bring you a confession. Oh, give me the circumstantial cases. That's where the fun is, right? Isn't that why we loved Few Good Men? Well, that's what we have here right now, a circumstantial case, as of today. But it does show a trend, and a clear trend, and it does have similar players. Very similar in the case of Susan Rice. And the past tells us a lot about how to respond to this circumstantial evidence today. And I happen to believe that it's all a trend of consequence as well. And I believe the cover-up tactics and the narrative control tactics are the same time and time again. So Susan Rice can say, I didn't reveal nothing to nobody. All she wants is she a credible witness. Was she credible on Bergdahl? Was she credible in Baghdad? Was she credible in Syria? I think that's relevant in a circumstantial case. But here's the main thing, and I've got a break, and then I'll begin the prosecution of today's top story. Whether you're on the left, whether you're CNN, MSNBC, Obama, Rice, Clinton, whoever you are out there listening, wherever you might be, or whether you're a Trump supporter, a Jeb supporter, a Ted supporter, a conservative of the Reagan Revolution, on the right or anywhere in between, here's the bottom line. Somebody did unmask, and somebody did leak it, and somebody got the order and did it, and did so for a reason and an intent. And it was either the national security of the United States of America and its citizens, or it was political and it was manipulation. So anybody that tells you, trust me, don't. Anybody tells you this is just a narrative war, they're a participant on one of the sides of the narrative war. But for those Americans that believe in the truth, that believe in consequence and justice and the deterring messages of justice, you better wake up. Because somebody unmasked, and if nobody's ever explained to you what that is, I'm going to today. And somebody revealed the names and leaked it to the media. And if it's not Susan Rice, it's somebody, and any journalist worth their weight would be following those facts to the story and the truth. Not the look the other way narrative. So I hope you haven't had a mental bypass, like a gastro bypass. I hope you got a big appetite, because I got a lot of facts and a lot of truth and a lot of circumstantial evidence, and it paints a pretty clear picture of where we should go from here. And it's not look the other way. It's keep listening to the Savage Nation. Del Giorno in for Savage. We'll continue in a moment.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Welcome back into the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Del Giorno from Nashville, Tennessee, in for Dr. Savage. 855-400-7282, 855-400-SAVAGE. Obviously the big story. All eyes turn to Susan Rice, thanks to the leaks. And by the way, leaks not from a deep throat, but leaks that originate from a Bloomberg reporter and a New York Times reporter that apparently had the story and have been holding it to protect the Obama administration. So did Susan Rice, the great liar of liars when it came to the Benghazi attacks, is she responsible? Well, just to kind of restage, we said, look, somebody, narratives aside, partisan politics aside, divided America aside, somebody unmasked and somebody leaked and someone was given the order to and for a certain intent. Now, we should follow the facts and find out. That's a no-brainer. But what we have from the left is an immediate suspicious defense, which I'm going to address a little bit later on. But first, I want you to understand what's at stake. Now, I'm sure as a Michael Savage listener, you're very educated, but you never know who might be peeking in and listening today. So as a quick review, what is this masking and unmasking? I mean, this isn't Phantom of the Opera, right? Well, as a nation, we have the legal right to, and we do, wiretap members of other countries. And it's for the purpose of your national security. We live on one earth with a bunch of people, and some of them are enemies. Now, I like to use this analogy, because if you've never been shrimping, it's really not rocket science. You get out on a hot, sunny day in the water, and if you know how to do your nets and keep them from getting tangled and weigh them right, the net goes into the water, and then you just troll really slow. And you drink beer, and people tell stories about their dysfunctional relationships. And when it gets heavy enough, you go, time to pull, and you reel in the net. Now, lucky for you, you never go order a shrimp platter and get a license plate, or order a shrimp platter and get a sheephead fish. And the reason you don't is the net comes up, and then you stand there, and the shrimp go one way, and everything else goes back into the water. That's the sorting. All right, so the same is done with this intelligence. While you have the legal right to listen to this guy from Russia or that guy from China, you don't have a legal right to listen to who they're talking to. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean, if the guy might be a spy for Russia, but he might just be ordering a pizza. Or he might be having a conversation about the, you know, Washington Nationals baseball game. And nobody has the right to know the identity or see the person he was talking to unless they're relevant to the investigation. So it is legal to do that for foreign, not legal to do it for who they're talking to. So what has to happen? Well, somebody has to unredact it. Somebody has to unmask it, and somebody has to identify it. Now, that makes the paramount question, is it relevant? Which would be very revealing of the intent. In other words, were they shrimping for a Russian, or were they shrimping for a Trump? And a connection. Because if it was done for political reasons and not national security, and if it wasn't relevant to what they were seeing and who they were trying to wiretap, then somebody illegally gave the order, and somebody illegally unmasked, and somebody illegally identified, and then somebody really illegally leaked. And they did so for a very clear intent that is obvious to manipulate the outcome of an election. Making this, like Benghazi, like the Tea Party, targeting of the IRS, and all the other things that build this trend, very troubling. Because it's all the same players, for all the same reasons, and for all the same side of the narrative war. As I said at the opening of the show, I love a circumstantial case. And I'm not buying MSNBC or CNN, which I'll be revealing to you momentarily. But this is a narrative war and ignore the other side. No, I'm following facts. Because that's the only way to the truth. And you are too. Because you're in the Savage Nation. Michael Del Giorno in Nashville, in for Dr. Savage. More next half hour.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
Savage 855-400-7282 is the phone number. This is the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Del Giorno from Nashville, Tennessee. Proud to be sitting in for Dr. Savage today. You can get all the latest daily headlines by signing up or signing in to the Savage newsletter at michaelsavage.com. Debuted at number one. Time to get and order your copy of Michael's new bestseller, Trump's War, His Battle for America. All right, so now the story leaks that Susan Rice did the unmasking and did the leaking. Well, you know, I got to tell you something, just to kind of quickly review. I'm nobody's shill, all right? You know, Donald Trump has had some pretty bad moments as president of the United States. I think in his draining of the swamp, he doesn't realize there's a lot of Republicans he shouldn't be trusting and draining too. And that led to the debacle and the botching of actually repealing and replacing Obamacare. But, you know, just as an unbiased person who's not defending or criticizing, he's the president of the United States, and regardless of everybody's narratives, he won the election. And he won it fair and square. So there's a delegitimizing of Trump that is not fair. I think Chuckie Schumer, and I think the last time I filled in, I brought this up, said something very revealing, and this was during all the confirmation hearings. And he actually said, I think we're doing a real service to the American people by vilifying Trump's nominees. Now, what a strange thing for a senior senator to say. That's his service to the United States Senate. Vilifying a fair and square new administration's nominees to the all-important agency heads for his cabinet. Of course, vilifying is to speak or write in an abusive and disparaging manner. But he goes on to elaborate. You know, do we hope we could hope, of, you know, to force a withdrawal of this person or that person? Yeah. But even if we don't, it's all about laying the groundwork to stymie the Trump administration. Now, they're revealing to you their game plan. Maybe not every individual play, but certainly their overall game plan. Delegitimize and stymie. So that is a political game that is being played, at least by the Democrats, who have lost control of the executive branch of government and both houses of the legislative branch of government. And if they use a nuclear option, which is what it's going to take now to get Gorsuch on the bench, they will then lose the judicial branch of government. And there's only three branches. The other thing that made me suspicious from the beginning, there was this narrative, this blank narrative. Oh, the Russians tampered with the election. Oh, how did they tamper? Did they actually go into the computers, hack, and change people's votes? No. No, through the hacking. Well, do you have proof that it was Russian? Never could really get around to that. And then we had research after the election that showed, you know what the real deciding factor of the election was? For over 62% of the American people, they didn't like either. But they broke Trump's way over 80%. And the whole referendum election and movement explains that. They didn't trust politicians, especially that damaged candidate, that proven liar, that proven untrustworthy establishment Clinton candidate. But then the narrative was, well, but she won the popular vote. He didn't win. He only won the Electoral College. Well, yeah. That's the scoreboard. He won the election. So this all becomes a tactic about vilifying, stymieing, delegitimizing. That's the game. So now we get this whole Russian thing, and that's the first thing that doesn't make sense. There's no ties to Russia. You just kind of knew in your gut this was going to blow up in someone's face, didn't you? And then the more that the game is played and the more that comes out, it's starting to show a revealing trend. It's starting to show similar players. History is starting to repeat itself, and it will continue to until somebody holds them accountable. Now, I want to just stop right now, and I want to start with CNN's Don Lemon. Because this is a shocking, I have spent 15 years of my career trying to awaken people to media bias. They're rewriting reality just like Hollywood and your radical left academia professors are rewriting history and rewriting civics. They're rewriting reality today, and they control it by the stories they cover, the stories they don't, the angles they choose, the angles they don't, the people they'll interview, the people they won't, the quotes they use, the quotes they won't. It used to be a game, and it used to take somebody like me to explain it. But now I am seeing such a brazen level of bias. What you're going to hear Don Lemon do is not report. He's not going to deliver a news story to you. He's going to give you a prepared response. And I don't know if it's in our clip, but he actually ends with, are you kidding me? I wouldn't insult your intelligence and even cover this story.
It has been 1 month since the President of the United States falsely tweeted that former President Barack Obama wiretapped him. 1 month later, the White House and the President are still trying to make a lie true. And they're using the President's Twitter account, the White House press briefing podium, and right-wing media to do it. Today it's a claim that President Obama's former National Security Advisor, Susan Rice, unmasked the names of Trump associates. We will talk about that in detail in just a moment on this very program. And last week, it was a debunked talking point that former Obama administration official Evelyn Farkas admitted spying on the Trump team. She did no such thing. The week before that, it was Representative Devin Nunes' clumsy effort to give the president cover for wiretapping claims. The president said he was vindicated by Nunes. He was not. The Washington Post today calls the latest claims about Susan Rice anatomy of a fake scandal ginned up by right-wing media and Trump. So let us be very clear about this. There is no evidence whatsoever that the Trump team surveilled or was spied on illegally. There is no evidence that backs up the president's original claim. And on this program tonight, we will not insult your intelligence by pretending otherwise, nor will we aid and abet the people who are trying to misinform you, the American people, by creating a diversion.
I got to stop right here and say, isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? You know, I think global warming is the great analogy. First of all, Al Gore told us seas were going to be flowing into our living rooms. People were going to be starving to death. We were all going to be dying. Glaciers were going to melt. Temperatures were going to rise sky high. Now, the problem is, he said, all that's going to happen in 10 years. And we're past 10 years. And none of it's happened. In fact, the whole thesis of global warming, which, by the way, if you do your research, it goes back to Agenda 21 and sustainable development. This was a UN agenda to eliminate any military or economic superpowers, to de-develop developed countries and to developize undeveloped countries. It was to redistribute wealth worldwide, and it was ultimately about control for the establishment of a one-world government. It was never about science, and it was never about the temperature. And even if you did everything these wackos are telling you to do, it doesn't do any good if China's not doing it, if India's not doing it. I mean, it's the world. And even if you did everything they said, you wouldn't impact temperatures but 0.1 degree. Who are you fooling as you're destroying your economy? Well, the 1 degree corrected. The ice was back and thicker than ever. We're actually in global cooling. And CO2 levels have never been higher. And this whole thing has been debunked, right? So where are we at now? Oh, the debate's over. There's no more debate. And if you don't believe in it, you're a denier, and you are a clear and present danger to humanity. That's coming next. Prosecution. Crimes against humanity. Because the debate is just over. We have no facts. We have no proof. We've been debunked. So now we just say the debate is over. Isn't that what Don Lemon did? That's what journalism is today compared to the Watergate years. That's our Woodward and Bernstein. And don't you love how they lay out the case? Nothing to see here. Keep moving. All debunked, all debunked. All narrative, all agenda. As he's carrying out, all narrative, all agenda. I mean, what journalist doesn't want to at least give you the story, follow the facts, see if there's something to it? How could he be so sure before it's ever even a story that it's already debunked? That's not news coverage. That's a formal response. They're peppering you with distractions. Let me give you a couple. Trump campaign advisor met with Russian operative in 2013. Holy crap! Wait a minute. Time out. What? Trump wasn't even running for president in 2013. That don't make sense. That's all right. We've all had our mental gastro bypass, and we can't read any more than a headline. Well, for grins, let's move on. Court filings show that Carter Page, who was a foreign policy advisor to Donald Trump's presidential campaign, met with a Russian intelligence operative in 2013, long before Donald Trump was ever a candidate, and gave him documents about energy industry issues. The operative, Viktor Podabnia, I think is how you say it, was one of three men charged in connection with a Russian spy ring. And the documents say that he tried to recruit Page, who was an energy consultant working in New York. Oh, well, that's different than the headline. The advisor to Trump's campaign didn't meet with this Russian operative. An energy consultant working in New York did. And the guy tried to recruit him, and he didn't succeed. And the guy that tried to recruit him is in jail. The hell does any of this have to do with anything? Oh, well, when you get down to the very final paragraph, because they're so clever with their bias. Oh, Page briefly served as a foreign policy advisor to Trump's campaign and left before the election. Trump had never had a relationship with this guy. Page, by the way, says he just shared basic immaterial information and publicly available research documents with the Russian spy, but it was long before he knew Trump, long before Trump was. That's how they try to cloud it. Again, if they can get you to just see this as, the left has their narratives, right has their narratives, I don't know. Let's go get some pizza. Did you hear Charo got voted off of Dancing with the Stars? Gucci goo. Anything but have you follow the facts. Here's another one. This is a classic today. Blackwater founder held secret meeting to set up Trump-Putin backdoor. The Washington Post reported yesterday that Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater security firm, attended a secret meeting 9 days before Donald Trump's inauguration. Well, that's all the... I mean, do you realize the stretch in circumstantial evidence on these stories? And you don't even hear me doing a Don Lemon. Let alone we got a proven liar on Bergdahl, on Benghazi. I mean, go on and on, Susan Rice. Always the chosen liar for the Obama administration, following the same pattern and the same agenda and the same intent. But this one, look at how circumstantial, and nobody has a problem believing this. 9 days before Trump's inauguration, he apparently met with a Russian close to Vladimir Putin. I mean, of course, we immediately understand that this is to establish a back-channel line of communication with Moscow. Now, even though the meeting's agenda is unclear, the report says that the United Arab Emirates arranged the meeting and did so to see if Russia would agree to curtail its relationship with Iran. Prince, who now heads up the Hong Kong-based security firm, Frontier Services Groups, was a high-dollar Trump campaign donor. Oh, well, then that settles it. So they'll pepper you with stories to try to make them, just in quantity, equal. You ever notice how whenever there's something really revealing that comes out, boom, there's a bombshell of other stories the very next day. And the goal is to get you to think there's just a narrative war going on. Don't bite. No, there's truth somewhere. And there's facts that will lead it to you. And you have dishonest middlemen as your brokers. So, I guess because Lemon says it's not a story and he's not going to lower himself or disregard, it's above our intelligence to even give the story a story. Oh, well, I guess we'll just turn the other way. Nothing to it. Nothing to even look into. Or perhaps today's follow-up, which is Susan Rice herself. A proven liar saying, I didn't share nothing with nobody. Oh, well, that ends it, right? Wrong, as we continue on The Savage Nation next.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
You're listening to The Savage Nation. I'm Michael Del Giorno from Nashville, Tennessee, in for Dr. Savage. 855-400-7282, 855-400-SAVAGE. So we're talking about Susan Rice, and right away we have CNN's Don Lemon come on saying, oh, this is nothing but narratives. This is all a cover-up and a diversion to Susan Rice. There's no, this guy knows it all right from the beginning. Listen, I'll be the first person to look at you and say, well, I know where this story's coming from. And I know where the person who leaked it said he got it, and it wasn't from the intelligence community. It was from a Bloomberg and a New York Times reporter who claimed they were holding the story to protect the Obama administration. Do I know that as a fact? No, I know the fact that that's what that person's reporting. And, of course, the report is that Susan Rice was the person behind the unmasking and the identifying of various members of the Trump team. Now, I don't know how Don Lemon knows right off the bat and right from the beginning. Absolutely, there's no facts to this. Absolutely, there's nothing to even explore. Goes against every journalistic instinct, right? It's like your kids in the living room. The vase is broke. There's water everywhere. Nick, did you do it?
I didn't do it.
And Alex, we didn't do it. Oh, I guess somebody broke in and broke it. All right, I'll clean it up. And then not expect other things to be broke in the future. Or you walk up to a judge. My client did not do it. Oh, well, if you say he didn't do it, case dismissed. Who doesn't follow the facts now? Especially when it is Susan Rice, with a history of lying and proven lying. Now, the segment's too short here to do, but when we come back, we're going to look at, and remember my earlier lesson on what unmasking is, because somebody ordered it. And if it was President Obama, he ordered it for a reason. And the only reason you would unmask the non-foreign person is if you felt it was relevant to national security and to that for which you were investigating. And then somebody revealed it and leaked it. So see, whether you're on the left or on you're the right, whether you're CNN and MSNBC or Fox or the Savage Nation or whoever in between, somebody did do it. And you don't just dismiss the case. You keep following the facts until once and for all, you identify whom, who gave the order, who did it, and who leaked it. But how could a CNN reporter last night just say, oh, there's nothing to this, and it's beneath our network and you to even do this story. How could they possibly be so sure? How could they possibly have such a prepared response? We're living in a new day with a dishonest middleman, the lack of journalists. Next on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
I am Michael Del Giorno from Music Row in Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee. Honored to be filling in once again for Dr. Savage. The phone number, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. This is the Savage Nation. You can check out all the stories that we're covering today, even some we may not get to, by signing into or signing up for the Savage newsletter. You can subscribe today at michaelsavage.com or pick up a copy of his number one debuting New York Times best-selling book, Trump's War. His battle for America. We've kind of been laying out this whole Susan Rice story. And unlike CNN's Don Lemon, who, of course, has it all figured out, there's nothing here to see, keep moving. I say, well, there's some compelling facts and facts that need to be explored. I don't have all the answers right now. I couldn't possibly. But somebody very credible says that he gets this from two reporters, one from Bloomberg, one from the New York Times. And they've had the story all along. Who's been doing the unmasking? Who gave the orders and why? And who leaked it? And ultimately what its purpose was. And I think you find out from the Bloomberg reporter and the New York Times reporter, if all stories are accurate, that the reason they were hanging on to it was to protect Obama. So that really speaks to intent. So we say this is a courtroom of public opinion, and we say that this is a circumstantial case, but I want to be the first person to look you in the eye and say, never mind these narrative wars, whether it's the left or the right. Somebody unmasked, and it's illegal, and it's dangerous to all of our privacy and security and our constitutionally protected place. So who gave the order? Who did it? And what was their intent? Was it for the national security of the United States, or was it for political purposes? In other words, if you're Don Lemon, or you're Michael Savage, or you're Michael Del Giorno, all right, I'm going to play you Susan Rice in a minute. It says, I didn't do nothing. I revealed nothing to nobody. Okay, well, somebody did. And it's not an outrageous place to start. After all, you were the national security advisor. And this is a national security tool. You realize how bad this looks, Susan? You would be the one working that closely to the president. The other thing that we're going to explore this hour is a trend that has developed. And I want to look you right in the eye, if nobody else has, and said, if you just go back to Benghazi, you're not going back far enough. You start with the Tea Party lesson. You see, Barack Obama gets elected president of the United States, gets the nomination over Hillary Clinton, wins his election easy over John McCain, and he is the highest. Guy got a Nobel Prize before he did anything. This guy is riding the highest level of celebrity. And he gets started with Obamacare, and he had a lot of stuff he had planned. But none of it happened. Why? Because in the midst of that, at the grassroots, very natural, not partisan, not politically driven, not agendized and funded, a natural uprising begins. The Tea Party movement. And these are just Americans saying, you know what? You can't spend your way out of a spending problem. You can't debt your way out of a debt problem. This debt is outrageous, and it's unsustainable, and it's going to destroy us. And whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, for God's sakes, you don't have a revenue problem. You have a spending problem. Then they're looking at jobs and the borders and unenforced laws, and they're saying, we're a sovereign nation. We have a right to defend our borders. And we're a government of laws. You have a right to enforce those laws, not only for justice and security and protection, but it was bankrupting us economically. draining our education budgets, draining our health care. It's a big part of the, you know, the Obamacare issue can be tied very closely to immigration. Why? Well, what was blowing everything up is people that didn't have insurance walking right into an emergency room. So you had cost shifting at payment time. And all Obamacare did was really shift it to premiums. But that's why the costs were escalating, because more people were not paying than paying. So basically, these people are going into the emergency room, not taking care of themselves, you know, getting all kinds of expensive treatments, and you are paying for it. Because now your sonogram is X dollars when it used to be X dollars. So it was a threat to our national financial security, and at a time of war with radical Islam, our homeland security. So this natural grassroots movement of the Tea Party starts rising up. And what does it do? Shocks the crap out of Obama, and the midterm election gives control of the House of Representatives to the Republicans. Now you got to check and balance. Well, Barack Obama sits down and he says, I ain't dealing with this in my reelection. The hell happened? And that's when somebody gives the order and somebody starts harassing. Why were they harassing Tea Party nonprofits? They wanted the names of people that were giving. They wanted to start identifying so that they could attack and discredit. And they wanted to cut off funding. That was purposely targeting to manipulate an outcome of a presidential reelection campaign. Way worse than Watergate. Shulman, scot-free. His replacement, Stephen Miller, resigns scot-free. Lois Lerner, she's enjoying all your benefits. No one ever held accountable. Let me tell you, this trend begins with the Tea Party and the targeting of the Tea Party, which, as I told the producers earlier, and you should know, still is continuing. Not only was nobody held accountable, nobody has still to this day stopped it. But that's the beginning of a pattern. So then you go to the president's reelection, and he's in Charlotte, North Carolina, accepting his nomination for reelection of president of the United States. And what does he tell the American people? Bin Laden's dead. Al-Qaeda's decimated. Reelect me, and now let's fix the economy and our recovery. The problem. Because it was Hillary's vision, and because he followed, we meddled in Benghazi. Turned our back on Gaddafi, who, by the way, was no Boy Scout, but he was complying in the war on terror. We get rid of him, creates a vacuum, and it gets filled. And it gets filled by Al-Qaeda that's not as decimated as the president portrays. So what could be the worst thing after you're sitting at a convention saying, Bin Laden's dead, and he was, and may I say, because I don't get to fill in every day, Bin Laden's death was great for 9/11 justice. It had very little bearing on the war on terror. Very little. Because Bin Laden was never the mastermind. Mohammed is. Bin Laden was never the inspiring motive. Mohammed is. And world dominance is the game. And one dies and another steps right up. So yeah, Bin Laden was dead. Irrelevant. Beyond justice for 9/11. But Al-Qaeda is far from decimated. And it's about to morph into ISIS in Iraq, where you left too soon. As he's negotiating the exit of Afghanistan with the cause of the war in Afghanistan. The Taliban. You can't make this stuff up. As he destroys our relationships with Turkey. As he aids and abets Iran. It was crazy time. But oh, by the way, he got rid of Gaddafi. The place was crawling with Al-Qaeda. And we know, because Ambassador Stevens was writing, because he wrote in his journal that a CNN reporter picked up in his burned out compound. He was writing for weeks. This place is crawling with Al-Qaeda. They're planning an attack. We don't have security. We won't be able to defend ourselves. And we know from emails since that this administration knew within 2 hours it was pre-planned and it was Al-Qaeda. Yet they send Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton, Hillary who bought ads throughout the Middle East apologizing for spending millions of your taxpayer dollars, apologizing in the Middle East over a YouTube video. Susan Rice goes on all the talking head shows saying it was about a YouTube video, and it was all a massive cover story and cover-up. Why? It didn't match their narrative. Al-Qaeda was supposed to be decimated. The war was supposed to be over. Just like Hillary was supposed to win and carry on the Obama legacy and continue the de-development of America, the elimination of America as a superpower, the propping up of all of our enemies, and the abandonment of all of our friends. And she was a shoo-in over a cartoon character, Miss Universe-owning, reality show-hosting Donald Trump. But then he comes out with the nomination, and suddenly somebody's unmasking in July. Suddenly, someone's identifying and leaking names? Well, this is starting to sound too much like Benghazi, too much like the Tea Party targeting. I mean, I think in a courtroom of public opinion where circumstantial evidence is the case, this is a pretty compelling pattern. And it involves all the same players. Now, in a courtroom or in a United States congressional hearing, you would have enough information and enough suspicion to at least, with all due respect, Ms. Rice, would you please appear and answer some questions from the United States government? But you know what Susan Rice would like to do? Not appear before the United States congressional hearing. She'd like to appear before her friends at MSNBC. And then just deny it, and that supposedly ends it. Three pieces of audio from Ms. Rice as we continue on the Savage Nation next. Del Giorno in for Michael Savage. Phone number 855-400-SAVAGE.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
I am Michael Del Giorno in for Dr. Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Our phone number, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. And I promise I'm going to get to Terry, John, and more of your calls here in a moment. I want to just finish making this case. We live in the United States of America. We live in a constitutional representative republic. We live in a government of laws. And if laws have been broken, it's up to congressional hearings to find out. But that isn't how we play life, like it's some kind of a tabloid, some kind of a reality show. So this is a very serious allegation that a former ambassador who got caught lying and delivering a cover story to the American people and then got promoted to national security advisor and would most naturally work closely with the president. And if anybody did any unmasking or ordered any unmasking or leaked any unmasking, of course it would be her. So it's all very logical. Not for CNN, of course. They're outraged. This is beneath their network, Diva, and beneath you for them to even cover this story. I mean, they're on an absolute rampage. Actually instructing their viewers to ignore the story. Journalistically, I've never seen anything so brazen in my life. And so the accused, Susan Rice, not before Congress, which is a legitimate hearing to have, answers a few questions for MSNBC, soundbite number one.
Did you make more requests to find the identity of Americans who had been picked up in incidental collection? I'm not asking you the substance, which I know work is classified, but were there more instances where at the tail end of the administration that you had to make, that you felt you had to make those requests to follow up on the raw data you were looking at?
Andrea, I really can't be particular about the pace, because understand that over 8 years, for me and others who served, it was not uncommon. In fact, it was necessary at times to make those requests to find out the identity of U.S. officials on every topic under the sun when it seemed relevant. I don't have a particular recollection of doing that more frequently after the election, for example, than doing so before.
I wasn't born yesterday. I know this is common. I know this is common throughout American history. We saw it happen and abused for political purposes leading into World War II with Roosevelt. We saw it certainly with J. Edgar Hoover. Again, going back to masking, Yes, it is legal. Yes, it is necessary for national security to wiretap and observe foreign people in our country. But you protect the people they're talking. If they call and order a pizza, the person that answers the phone, someone sells pizza, he's protected. All right, and I understand that it probably happens far more than people know. But that's irrelevant as to how often somebody gave the order and it was for an intent. Was the intent national security or was the intent political manipulation? That's the real question that needs to be asked. And in the case of these Trump people, were you doing it because you had evidence or that the conversation was such that it was so relevant and necessary for the understanding of it? Because if you can't make that case, it's obvious it was political. It's obviously was a political agenda for election time manipulation. And this is why you have members of the United States Congress in a formal hearing ask questions and not Andrea Mitchell and MSNBC. Who dropped dead made MSNBC and CNN the boss? Well, they are the boss of the leftist narrative. Clip two.
Did the pace accelerate during the transition, perhaps in early December, perhaps when the president ordered an investigation into the hacking, the Russian hacking? Did the pace of unmasking requests, of your unmasking requests, accelerate toward the end of the White House tenure?
And I can't say the pace of unmasking requests would accelerate, but if you're asking were there more reports provided to senior U.S. officials after the president requested the compilation of the intelligence, which was ultimately provided in January, yes. What happened was, as the IC went about the business,
the intelligence community intelligence went about the business of following up on the president's order,
fulfilling the president's request for such a report, they went back and scrubbed more reports. They began to provide more such reports to American officials, including myself.
To clip three in the golden question.
This is not anything political has been alleged. The allegation is that somehow Obama administration officials utilized intelligence for political purposes. That's absolutely false. Let me explain how this works. I was a national security advisor. My job is to protect the American people and the security of our country. That's the same as the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the CIA director. And every morning, to enable us to do that, we receive from the intelligence community a compilation of intelligence reports that the IC, the intelligence community, has selected for us on a daily basis to give us the best information as to what's going on around the world.
Here's the bottom line. Of course it picked up. There was hacking. It was embarrassing to the Democrats. And so that is political in its origin. But how credible is this witness? And should the whole case die now because she says no? I say no. Next.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
We are back on the Savage Nation. I'm Michael DelGiorno from Nashville in for Dr. Savage. The phone number, and we're going to get to your calls momentarily, 855-400-SAVAGE. I want to conclude this segment on Susan Rice. I think the place to interview Susan Rice is before a congressional hearing, not with MSNBC and Andrea Mitchell. She can't have it both ways. She can't claim, well, I don't have any idea how much unmasking was done or if the rate increased or, you know. And then she says, the notion which some people are trying to suggest is that by asking for the identity of American people, which is to unmask, is the same as leaking it, and that's completely false. So, you know, obviously she's the national security advisor, and obviously she works very closely with the president. Obviously, as she makes clear, the president was very concerned over Russian involvement in hacking. So political is its origin. After all, the DNC was very embarrassed by what was revealed. But it didn't determine the outcome of the election. We know that from post-research. But that was certainly where it began. I mean, nobody felt the need that America was being threatened by a Russian invasion, per se. So now we know from her that, yeah, they were tracking. Yeah, they were unmasking. But I didn't leak nothing to nobody. Well, somebody did. And it's time for a hearing. I also think that the pattern is important, and it started with the Tea Party targeting, and then the Benghazi cover story and cover-up, and then now this. And they all center around elections and their outcome. Don't forget, just as a review, the Tea Party harassment was because they won the midterm election. And Obama wanted to make crystal clear, ensure that they were not an influence when it came time for him to be reelected. And so they were targeted to discredit and to defund, to control their influence in order to manipulate the outcome of his reelection campaign. Benghazi was about an election because he had told the world bin Laden's dead, Al-Qaeda's decimated, the war is over. And that clearly wasn't the case in Benghazi. Clearly, it was a mistake to remove Gaddafi. Clearly, Al-Qaeda was fine and still filling a vacuum, and the place was crawling, and it was a pre-planned attack. So what did he do? What did Hillary Clinton do? What did Susan Rice do? Told a lie. And we can prove that now through emails. They knew immediately within an hour it was a planned attack and still told people for weeks. It was a spontaneous reaction to a YouTube video. Why Hillary even spent millions of dollars. So now here's Susan Rice basically saying, I'm the national security advisor, like the Secretary of State and the President of the United States. This unmasking happens. And yes, that's my job, to keep America safe. No, your job isn't your protection. Your track record is the concern. This is the same Susan Rice, and I could run down the laundry list, that would tell you that Syria wasn't a civil war. It was a reaction to global warming. That was a Stanford speech. The same person that would tell you there is no military solution to the raging conflict in Yemen. This is the same person that would tell you that Sergeant Bo Bergdahl was a hero and not a deserter and a treasonist soldier, and that led to an administration for the first time negotiating with terrorists and releasing very dangerous people from Guantanamo Bay. And do we have the Susan Rice clip ready for, I think it was 18 or whatever it was? Her fantastic story of Benghazi. Play
first of all, let's recall what has happened in the last several days. There was a hateful video that was disseminated on the internet. It had nothing to do with the United States government.
So a proven liar is telling you now, look the other way. Don't confuse unmasking with leaking. And I have no idea how many people we were unmasking or why, or if the pace picked up. Now, the reports are it picked up in July after Trump got the nomination. The trending shows, whether it's the Tea Party first in the midterm election, or Benghazi, the lesson of the reelection campaign, or this, when they thought they were losing the easy Hillary win. There's a trend there. There's a circumstantial, real, clear trend there. And I think the oddest thing is the way CNN and MSNBC feel a need to not cover this news, follow the facts, but defend these people. It's a brazen level of media bias that I never thought I'd live to see. And so masking is important, and something illegal did happen, regardless of what side of the narrative you're on. Somebody ordered it, somebody did it, and somebody leaked it. And it is more than reasonable to have Susan Rice appear before a congressional hearing, not a CNN or MSNBC hearing. Next question is, what say you at 855-400? So before we move on to other topics, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282 is where we find Terry listening on WABC in New York. Terry, welcome into the Savage Nation. There you go. Hey, Terry.
Listen, the couple of points. First of all, she's a big Alinskyite. She's also a Kalinskyista. So you shouldn't be shocked by anything she does. And then because she's an Alinskyite, you got to parse every word she said. In the first cut that you played on her, she said officials. And that's a very specific phrase to a security advisor. She's hedging her words there. Two, she's saying she didn't leak, but she still didn't say that she didn't unmask. And while she may not have been the one who leaked, she definitely is the one who unmasked, which is what the legal charge would be. As far as it going before a congressional investigation, with Mitch McConnell, I don't think it'll happen. The only way it'll happen is if they appoint a special prosecutor. And again, because of too many rhinos, I don't really see it happen.
Well, and I appreciate that. By the way, I was certainly not saying I was shocked by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the CNN didn't shock me, but it appalled me. But I wouldn't say use the term shock. None of it shocks me anymore. In fact, I always say the only thing left shocking in life is the truth. I will say this. I don't think the solution is going to be found in a congressional hearing completely. I think it's going to be found in the American people. The American people are going to have to rise up and educate themselves historically and civically and understand things beyond headlines. And they're going to have to demand justice. And they're going to have to demand journalism. As I said at the beginning of the show, the biggest difference, I mean, whether you're looking at Tea Party, Benghazi, or even this, far worse than Watergate. So what's the difference? Well, I say the character and the demands of the American people and journalism. That's what keeps this from being a Watergate. John on WSBA in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. I just want to say you're doing a great job, and I want to thank you and Dr. Savage and all the other conservative speakers that are standing up for our freedom. You mentioned before about journalism and, you know, how could this happen with journalism? With true journalism, these things don't happen because true journalism, you know, presents the objective facts, and they allow the people to make up their own mind. They don't try to spin things and cause them to manipulate their thinking to the way they want them to think. That's the difference between fake news and true news.
I was just going to say real quickly, thanks for the call, John. I don't know. I think fake news is just anything you don't agree with, anything that doesn't fit your narrative. But what John says that is absolutely true is that the facts would pave the way of the trail. In other words, a true journalist is curious. A true journalist is diligent and dutiful and detailed, and they follow the facts. They're in pursuit of the truth. Or as John would say, just presenting you the story and letting you decide. Now, I got to be honest with you. Fox says, we report, you decide. Well, it's a great slogan, but they don't live it either. And so, see, that, to me, is one of the biggest problems in America. We are the divided states of America, not the United States of America. We are so divided. Indivisible? What a joke. We celebrate our divisions. We don't even require unity anymore. That's what happens when you make diversity your God. Anything goes. But the reality is, what journalist wouldn't be hungry? I mean, I have never heard of such a thing. As the story breaks, can we, I know you want to move on, but back at the, in Dallas, can you play the clip? Let's go back to CNN last night, because this is the most incredible thing I have ever heard. And I have spent 20 years explaining media bias to people. But let's go to CNN last night, because here's a reporter basically saying, this is not a story. Don't listen to it. Don't believe it. In fact, we're not even going to cover it. I've never heard anything like it. Play it. Lemon.
It has been 1 month since the president of the United States falsely tweeted that former President Barack Obama wiretapped him. 1 month later, the White House and the president are still trying to make a lie true. And they're using the president's Twitter account, the White House press briefing podium, and right-wing media to do it. Today, it's a claim that President Obama's former national security advisor, Susan Rice, unmasked the names of Trump associates. We will talk about that in detail in just a moment on this very program. And last week, it was a debunked talking point that former Obama administration official Evelyn Farkas admitted spying on the Trump team. She did no such thing. The week before that, it was Representative Devin Nunes' clumsy effort to give the president cover for wiretapping claims. The president said he was vindicated by Nunes. He was not. The Washington Post today calls the latest claims about Susan Rice anatomy of a fake scandal ginned up by right-wing media and Trump. So let us be very clear about this. There is no evidence whatsoever that the Trump team surveilled or was spied on illegally. There is no evidence that backs up the president's original claim. And on this program tonight, we will not insult your intelligence by pretending otherwise, nor will we aid and abet the people who are trying to misinform you, the American people, by creating a diversion.
A diversion, misleading the American people. This is classic Saul Alinsky. Trust me, whenever anybody says, trust me, don't trust them. Whenever anybody says, look the other way, start looking where they're trying to point you away from. They're always revealing what they're doing as they attack the other for doing it. You see, you don't understand. If you believe them, just blindly believe them, well, of course they win. But they win if you just believe it's a narrative war. Ah, the right's got its narrative, left's got its narrative. No, somebody unmasked this. Now, Susan Rice telling you, I did the unmasking, but that doesn't mean I did the leaking. So to his whole narrative that this is not a story, look the other way, don't even investigate it, which is so unjournalistic. How could he be so sure immediately? I'm not even sure, and it's the next day. I'm curious enough, and I see enough of a pattern, and I see enough of a motive, and I see a position with a proven liar that I'd want to, you know, have a hearing. I'm not saying Susan Rice did it in the conservatory with the rope, but I'm saying she lied about Bergdahl, she lied about Benghazi, and I can't even figure out what Don Lemon's thinking. Look, she ain't making any bones about who ordered the unmasking and that she had the unmasking. She's just saying she didn't leak it. And then I shared earlier with you the other stories that are out there floating. Of course, they don't debunk those. They just want to cloud it. They win if you just think it's a narrative war. Because you never pursue the facts and where they lead. I think the timing of a beginning in July is very suspicious. I think the same players. I think the same tracking and pattern of Tea Party, midterm election, not to be influencing the re-election. Benghazi, not to re-influence the re-election. And then now this, to influence the outcome of a Hillary victory. I mean, this is a pattern. So I see trending behaviors. I see trending players. I see trending no consequence. I see trending cover-ups and narrative control. And I see a dishonest middleman in the death of journalism playing a role in rewriting reality. And I see them going next to the same thing they did with global warming. Even though it's obvious to everyone, debate's over. And anybody that is still debating is a potential criminal against humanity. Got to move on to other stories, but something stinks to high heaven. I just want to be the one to remind you, somebody unmasked, and somebody did it for a specific reason. And somebody leaked it. And if it's not Susan Rice, that doesn't end the story. We just press on to who it was. But that hasn't been the pattern. There was never consequence for Shulman, for Miller, or Lois Lerner in the targeting of the Tea Party. There was never consequence for Hillary Clinton, or Susan Rice again, over Benghazi, or Bergdahl. Will there be consequence this time? I'm kind of with the listener in New York. It's all a charade when you got politicians involved. But when the American people rise up and know that the law matters, if you think, listen, nothing more dangerous than moral relativism. It can impact your eternal destiny. But legal relativism is chaos in a banana republic. And the American people better rise up and stop it. Because as you can see, if you don't, it's not going away. More of your calls and more stories on the Savage Nation. Del Giorno in for Dr. Savage next.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Is the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Del Giorno in for Dr. Savage, who is resting today. Well, I think we've pretty much prosecuted the circumstantial case of Susan Rice. We are going to move on in the next hour to a couple of other things, like illegal immigration being down. Imagine that you could actually encourage behavior or discourage behavior just by enforcing the law. As I say all the time, the only thing shocking left in life is the truth. And I got to make my loser of the day, Chuckie Schumer. And as you know, he wanted and he encouraged Donald Trump to have consulted with the Senate Democrats before picking a Supreme Court nominee. You know, elections have consequences. I didn't like it when Obama said it, but they do. And the American people knew that this election, in addition to being about Trump or Clinton, was also about sovereignty and secured borders and enforcing border laws. It was about jobs and trade deals. And yes, they knew very well it was about the balance of the third branch of government, an equal branch, if it will ever return to that, the justice. And there's not a Democrat. I mean, do you think Hillary Clinton was going to consult with the Republicans over her nominee? What a joke. But I'll play that audio for you. We'll put it into perspective. Hey, listen, as you can tell, if nothing else, we're in a war. And it's Trump's war and it's America's war. Trump's war, his battle for America. Debuted at number one, bestseller by Michael Savage. Pick up your copy today. And we'll continue on the Savage Nation with more of your phone calls at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. I'm Michael Del Giorno from Music City, USA. Happy to be sitting in for Dr. Savage with you on the Savage Nation. More in a moment.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, winner of the National Radio Hall of Fame Award, Michael Savage.
This is The Savage Nation. I am Michael Del Giorno from Nashville, Tennessee. Proud to be filling in for Dr. Savage, who's resting today. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. That's 855-400-SAVAGE. Don't forget to pick up a copy. Debuted at number one. I wrote a book one time. I think I sold 3,000 copies. Unfortunately, 2,500 of them were bought by me. But Dr. Savage, once again, debuting at number one, still a bestseller. Trump's War, The Battle for America. Pick up your copy today. The cleaning lady's here. Now, see, if this was local radio, we just let her come empty the trash, but she backs off. And then don't forget to follow all the stories. Michael is actually never off, and he's always keeping an eye on the top stories of the day, and even the ones we haven't gotten to today. You can sign up for or just sign on to the Savage Nation newsletter at michaelsavage.com. You know, I guess disc jockeys back in the day would have a favorite song, and so it shouldn't be, you know, forbidden for a talk show host to have a favorite story. I have to tell you, and we spent 2 hours on Susan Rice, so I think we're free to move on. I am fascinated with what appears to be a very highly sexual charged atmosphere at Fox News. I don't know what that midday show that's on. The sound is never on, but when I'm on the air locally in Nashville, it's always on the television set. I think it's called Outnumbered. And basically what you have are like five or six women, all of them wearing the exact same skin tight high skirt. One's in blue, one's in red, one's in green, one's in yellow. I mean, it's like the Rockettes, a sea of legs. The other day, as Bill O'Reilly, of course, is defending himself, that he has settled five sexual harassment lawsuits. I think it was $15 million. Don't fact check me on that, but something to that effect. I had been watching him on this show, and I felt sorry for him. Because with all that going on in the news, he's surrounded by these rocket legs on the set. And, of course, nobody's covered up. You know, nobody's behind a chair or a desk or anything. And I'm watching him trying to carry on a conversation without, you know, looking down or peeking. It was very uncomfortable. I felt sorry for him, especially under the circumstances. But I got to tell you, as a man, I find this highly offensive. I don't tune into Fox, you know, to see some hot girl with legs exposed. Like, I got to prove to people now that I'm watching Fox for the news like they used to argue over reading Playboy for the articles. And I'm so offended. I'm going to serious. I'm going to give him 6 years to fix this. And then I'm not watching anymore. But Fox has its troubles with lawsuits, as you know. The revelations of Bill O'Reilly. And again, I think this is part of the narratives in the media wars. All right. So there's, you know, they're not just trying to discredit Trump. They're trying to discredit anybody that's supporting them. But clearly they have a problem there. Roger Ailes and this. But it's the CNN lawsuit. Last December, CNN and other Time Warner units were hit with a proposed class action suit in Georgia federal court. The named plaintiff, and I think I'm pronouncing it right, Celeste Henley, who says she worked for CNN for 7 years until she was allegedly fired for emailing human resources about a discriminatory treatment. Now, unlike the lawsuits against Fox, the one against CNN and sister companies is much broader, claiming, among other things, that African Americans receive lower performance ratings and evaluations. Now, we know from the ideology of the left, and certainly they're the spokesperson for it at CNN. I mean, you just have to love where facts take you, right? As Hillary or as Bernie Sanders or any of these other people are telling you, equal pay for women. None of them are paying women equal. They weren't paying women equal at the Clinton Foundation. They weren't paying women equal when she was a United States senator. You know, so here's CNN, right? And of course, it has to be simply because they were African American. I mean, it can't be because of their actual performance. That just doesn't fit their ideology and narrative. That's a big problem. And this is a big problem for them, like Obama, that like to claim a superior role in reaching and serving that group and being a champion for that group. So CNN and its sister companies claimed more broadly that African Americans receive lower performance ratings and evaluations, that there are dramatic differences in the pay between similarly situated employees of different races, and that the promotion of African American employees is blocked by a glass ceiling. The complaint cites hiring and advancement statistics while alleging that African American employees have endured slurs from their superiors, including, hey, it's hard to manage black people. Who'd be worth more, black slaves from times past or new slaves? I mean, this is bombshell stuff. I mean, am I the only one that sees this? I mean, it is Trump's war, and it's his battle for America. But, I mean, we're all in this boat together, all right? So you can't say, like, you know, it's Captain Smith's war. We're all in the Titanic, and there's not enough boats. But it is a war, and there are other battles going on. And that's why I made my first 2 hours the thesis. Listen, I don't know if it's Susan Rice, but I don't know how Don Lemon knows it isn't. And I don't know why he's saying she didn't unmask anything while she's saying, of course I unmasked. That doesn't mean I leaked. I mean, they're all over the road. And I showed you how they're peppering it with other stories that are so debunkable. I mean, they're doing the same thing that they're telling you, look the other way, don't believe any of this. This is just false narratives and cover stories. Well, these are all, of course, the kings of cover stories, right? Whether it's targeting the IRS, whether it's Benghazi, or whether it's this. I mean, Susan Rice, a proven liar, goes on NBC and says, I didn't do any of this. Oh, okay, you're a credible witness. Next. But there is this side battle of those who think they control the narrative, and they shouldn't and they don't. Now, a big solution would be they return to journalism. But they're so in the tank, they're just shills. And so there's this giant tug of war. And while they delight when the lawsuits are Roger Ailes, and they delight when the lawsuits are Bill O'Reilly, after all, that might, you know, lift up their shows in prime time. Well, here comes CNN's. Can't wait to see how all of their analysts and hosts bury this story and tell you to look the other way. Also, I want to throw this out for your comments. Illegal immigration down 67% under Trump. Now, we haven't even built the wall yet. But just the notion of there's a difference between illegal and legal immigration. And you can't break into Mexico, and you shouldn't be allowed to break into America. We're a sovereign nation. We have a right to decide who gets in and who doesn't, and the proper way to get in. And we have a right to protect and enforce our laws. Just the notion of that versus 8 years of Obama saying, come on, even if you murder somebody, I'll let you go. Come on, there'll be no consequence. Come on, you'll get things I don't even give my citizens. Well, of course you got a lot. But when the American people rise up and elect a candidate who clearly says, hey, we're a sovereign nation, and I'm going to build a wall, and I'm going to secure our borders with technology and wall and bodies, we're going to enforce laws, look what happens before you even do anything. Just a suggestion. It's like when I'm explaining taxation to people. You do realize taxation has two purposes. It is to collect revenue, and it is to create a behavior. That's why you do it. Before anything is even built, illegal immigration across the U.S.-Mexican border has continued to fall. I mean, look at Wall Street. Look at the immigration numbers. I mean, there's more that's happened in these first 90 days than just the failure of the repeal and replace and Obamacare. Thank God it failed. That's a whole other segment. Illegal immigration across U.S.-Mexican borders has continued to fall under the Trump administration, dropping 67% through the end of March. Former border commissioner told Congress on Tuesday, that's even bigger than the drop reported for February, when the number of illegal immigrants caught, a yardstick for the overflow, dropped by 40%. Yeah, because for everyone they catch, you know how many got through. It's actually up to 67% in drop compared to last year. Customs and Border Protection did not immediately respond to the request for confirmation of the numbers. The agency has been releasing its monthly figures each month, though March figures have not been released yet. But there's no indication to say that they're off. That's just in messaging. Now, I don't know how Mexico gets away with it. You break into Mexico, good luck. You're lucky if you get out of the desert, and you're lucky if you get out of jail. And you definitely get your butt deported. Why is it they have that right and we don't? Suddenly we are hateful. This nation was built on immigration and assimilation, not breaking in, and squatters' rights. Another early sign, before the wall's even built, of a Trump victory. Now, I was mentioning earlier that if disc jockeys are allowed to have favorite songs, I'm allowed to have a favorite story. And boy, do I have one. My loser of the day, even over Susan Rice, Chuckie Schumer, when we continue on The Savage Nation next. Del Giorno in for Dr. Savage. More in a moment.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Keep this cranked up for a second, can you guys? That music. You know what this reminds me of? Growing up in Arlington Heights, Illinois, and my dad banging on the door. Michael, lower that music down! It's just the kind of stuff I used to get in trouble for. And now, well, not getting paid, but honored to be filling in for Dr. Savage. Welcome back into the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Del Giorno from Nashville, Tennessee. Our phone number, 855-400-7282, 855-400-SAVAGE. As I mentioned, I am allowed, just like a disc jockey who has a favorite song, to have a favorite story. And believe it or not, it was a tough call between Susan Rice and Chuckie Schumer. Elections naturally have consequences. Now, again, a president nominates a Supreme Court justice. The legislature confirms. And that's how the three branches interact. Now, I don't know if the left doesn't give us credit enough for our understanding, but I think the American people, and I know because I've seen the polling and the exit polling, they're watching America that can't figure out whether to go in a boys' room or a girls' room. See, the average American knows. You got an Audi, you go in the boys' room. You got an innie, you go in the girls' room. Or just like the head of the ACLU, if you're white, you can't pretend you're black. So they're seeing all of this chaos, and they're able to figure out, wait a minute. Why is it I'm dead when my heart stops beating, but I'm not alive when it starts beating? Wait a minute. Why is it a woman can go kill her baby, and that's choice? But if somebody else does it, it's double murder. And so what they're seeing is legislating from the judicial bench. I don't know when we woke up and thought, oh, the country's really run by judges. They're the final say. No, we the people are. And we have three equal branches of government. And the way the three equal branches work, and I'm not going to insult you with a civics lesson, you're Michael Savage listeners. A president brings forth a candidate for the Supreme Court. The legislative branch grills and then either confirms or denies. That's it. That's the process. And the American people knew in this election what this election was about. And that was a big reason for why people voted and why they swung Trump's way. So the American people have had a say that shouldn't be told to be ignored, not by a sitting senator. But what Chuckie Schumer suggests, as if Hillary would do it and as if Barack did it, makes him our loser of the day. So I want to share a couple of things about Chuckie Schumer after, but first, my quote of the day, my sound of the day, my favorite story of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, Chuckie Schumer on what Trump should have done in nominating a Supreme Court justice.
Let's have the president consult members of both parties. He didn't. He didn't with Gorsuch. And try to come up with a consensus nominee who could meet a 60-vote threshold. That's what President Clinton did with my friend, the senator from Utah, in selecting Justices Ginsburg and Breyer. It's what President Obama did with Merrick Garland. Of course, we realize a nominee selected this way would not agree with many of our views. That's true. But President Trump was elected president, and he's entitled by the Constitution to nominate. But Judge Gorsuch is so far out of the mainstream that the Washington Post said his voting record would place him to the right of Justice Thomas.
Well, if the Washington Post said it, that trumps the Constitution. Don't forget, this is Chuckie Schumer, as I shared with you earlier. The same Chuckie Schumer said, you know, we think we're doing a great service to the American people. Really, what's that service? We're vilifying all of Trump's nominees. Now, at that time, it was Labor Secretary. But, I mean, this is another nominee, Gorsuch, right? And by the way, there is such a thing as the English language, and words have meanings. Vilify is to speak or write in an abusively disparaging manner. But then he goes on to elaborate. He says, listen, you know, we hope we can force the withdrawal of a nomination, but even if we can't, it's all about laying the groundwork to stymie the Trump administration. Is this because he didn't talk to Democrats, because he didn't let the Democrats pick his nominee, as it's constitutionally his requirement to do? Or is this a part of the vilifying? Is this a part of the stymieing of the Trump administration? You know, yeah, I did the unmasking, but I didn't do the leaking. When you're a proven liar on Bergdahl, you're a proven liar on Benghazi, you're a proven liar on Syria, you're a proven liar on Yemen. And I got news for you. The one person disqualified for standing up and giving us a constitutional lesson on what President Trump should or should have done to get Democratic support is not Chuckie Schumer. Not after he believes that his service to the American people is to vilify any of Trump's nominees. You know, maybe get him to withdraw it, maybe not, win, lose. But in the long run, you're just laying groundwork to stymie the Trump administration. I think that disqualifies you on giving this great Washington Post presentation on Justice Gorsuch and what Donald Trump should or should not have done. That even trumps rice. Bigger than a giraffe, Chucky!
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
This is the Savage Nation. I am Michael DelGiorno from Nashville, Tennessee. Honored to be in for Dr. Savage. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. 855-400-SAVAGE. I love that guy's voice, whoever he is. Don't forget to pick up a copy of Trump's War, His Battle for America. It debuted number one, still a bestseller, another hit from Dr. Savage. A couple of things I wanted to do in this final time together. You know, I think it's as simple as, you know, an analogy I shared the last time I filled in, which was probably too much of my dysfunctional childhood. But it's, you know, there's information everywhere. There are voices everywhere. Whom to listen to and where to get your information becomes very important. And so, you know, I do think that somebody was unmasking, somebody was targeting, unmasking, and leaking. And I think they were doing for political purposes and the manipulation of an election more so than the national security of the United States of America and its citizens. And that needs to be investigated, and facts need to be followed. And so what you're seeing right now is the death of journalism. And that's important to explore. But I want you to know, to put things into perspective, there's two other things that are going on this week that I couldn't fill in for Dr. Savage. I couldn't have this opportunity to talk to so many Americans and not bring up. And one is the meeting with the Egyptian leader. And listen, this goes back to something I shared filling in for Michael in the past. Only Barack Obama can tell you why he chose his first speech to be in Cairo, Egypt. And only Barack Obama can tell you why he felt a need to apologize for America's past and to prop up like an apologist for Islam, the Muslim life, the Muslim doctrine, and the Muslim agenda. But what only Barack Obama could explain to you is why he insisted on the Muslim Brotherhood being present at that speech at a Cairo university. Because the Muslim Brotherhood was banned and imprisoned and a dangerous terrorist organization in Egypt. Now, they were taking advantage of Mubarak's failures. They were like tapping on people's shoulders saying, you know, Mubarak's not taking care of you. But we will. Oh, you need food? Here's some food. Oh, you need some capital to start a business? Here's some capital. Just remember us when we get our chance to rule again. And so what did your president do? He fanned the flames of terrorists raping, looting, rioting, and busting terrorists out of prison as spring, as democracy in bloom. And he fanned the flames and turned his back on an ally, Egypt, and fanned the flames of a Muslim Brotherhood coup and takeover. And then the Muslim Brotherhood said, well, we'll never run a president. We'll take control of the parliament, but we won't run a president. And then they did. Because one of the guys that was busted out of prison was Mohamed Morsi. And he ended up becoming president. And then he did away with the parliament and set up an Islamic dictatorship. You see, the Muslim Brotherhood is an umbrella of Islamic Society of North America, of CARE, of Islamic student unions. They have infiltrated government, the State Department, the White House. They've infiltrated law enforcement. They've infiltrated the military, infiltrated education, infiltrated science, because that's what they do. And we know what they do because we got their entire game plan in the Holy Land terror trial. It was their plan for a 25-year civilization overthrow. And I got news for you. They're 20 years down the road and they're winning. But it's a new day. And so the Obama administration meets with the new president of Egypt, and one thing is clear. The leadership of the United States government is now once again on the same page as the leadership of the Egyptian government, and that is that the Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization. And they are not to be trusted, and they are to be understood, and they're to be stood against. That's a game changer. I can't tell you how Trump's doing with repeal and replacing of Obamacare, but I can tell you that much is good. Just like I can tell you the border is getting secure, and already we're seeing illegal immigration falling, and that's before we build the wall and enforce the laws. I can look at the Dow Jones and tell you that there's optimism that if this president will get to tax cuts, get to reforms, we're going to have a prosperous economy. But make no mistake about it, there is no bigger game changer than these meetings with Egypt. Now, having said that, and forgive me, kind of spent my life studying Kennedy. I know that's strange for a conservative, right? You do realize that when Kennedy ran against Nixon, he was the thoughtful conservative, and Nixon was the liberal. That's how much the Democrat Party has changed, how much America has changed. But anyway, I digress. If you go back to Vienna very early in the Kennedy administration, and don't forget, Khrushchev thinks he's dealing with Kennedy's father. So he thinks he's got an appeaser. And Khrushchev is just a disrespectful, out-of-control bully, yelling, lecturing. I mean, going on and on and on. I remember Muhammad Ali's fight when he used rope or dope. Just let George Foreman punch himself out. till he's got nothing left and then knock him out. Great strategy. Well, Kennedy just sits there, this whole meeting in Vienna. Now, we know this from Khrushchev's son. I would actually make the case, not Khrushchev's son. I will tell you, we found a way out of the Cuban Missile Crisis because of this meeting, a meeting you never hear about. So Khrushchev is thundering away, bullying, belittling Kennedy for the entire meeting. Kennedy's not saying a word. When Khrushchev, kind of like Foreman, is just, he's out of energy, he's out of punches, he's out of everything. Kennedy just kind of goes, well, looks like it's going to be a long, cold winter, and gets up and leaves. And Khrushchev's son said, my father didn't know what to do with that. He didn't even know who he was dealing with. He couldn't believe it. Life is best understood looking back, but unfortunately has to be lived looking forward. That pearl of wisdom I read on a bathroom urinal wall. It served me well. And Khrushchev's son says he thinks that played a huge role in how the Cuban Missile Crisis played out. Never knew what to make of Kennedy. Your president, whether you love him or don't love him, is the head of our government. He is the commander-in-chief. He's the head of the executive branch of government. And he's the president of the United States. And I'm telling you, he's got a meeting with China this week that I say is exactly as important and critical as Kennedy's meeting with Khrushchev. And it will impact our time and all time. Not easy. He's going to have to look China in the eye and talk about trade and manipulation of the dollar. He's going to have to look to China in the eye and say, you don't fool me. We had a Korean War. Somebody pushed us back and it was you. And if you can't control North Korea, we're going to control it. Now the really sticky part. When you hear people say, why are they talking about sanctions against North? Haven't we sanctioned North Korea to death? Yes and no. Because the loopholes in all those sanctions are in China. And so this meeting with China this week is about, well, I'm going to tighten up these sanctions. And there's going to be no loopholes. I mean, there is a real potential conflict brewing here. Now, I often say we have proxy wars everywhere. If you don't think there's a proxy war between the United States and Russia right now being played out in Iran and Syria, you're a scriptural moron, a geopolitical moron, and not a very good student of history or reality. And if you don't realize whatever North Korea has, Iran has. Whatever Iran has, North Korea has. And if Russia is backing Iran and Syria, that puts them on the table. And if China's backing North Korea, or we're going to have to tighten things up on China in order to control North Korea. Gang, I mean, did anybody play dodgeball, shirts and skins, basketball, kickball on a playground? We're picking teams here. And you better wake up. And as for North Korea, they have the advanced centrifuges. They have the enriched uranium. They have the ability to build a weapon of mass destruction. Delivery systems, we used to laugh and make fun of. But they're going further and further, and they're more accurate and more accurate. Now the question is, can they put a payload on that missile and still get it that far and still get it that accurate? And then who sits in the room, the wise owl, that tells us exactly how much time that's going to be? Now Donald Trump will tell you, we can't allow this. They're 3 years away. Maybe. Maybe we're 1 year away. But I can tell you, this meeting with China, as Donald Trump would say, huge. It's huge. So you are a very educated, maybe the most educated audience listening to any one talk radio show in America today. I want to look you in the eye and say, for the meeting with Egypt. Now, a lot of Christians were killed and a lot of Christians were displaced, and a lot of Christians, Coptic Christians, were persecuted in Egypt because of your president. And by the way, nobody's that naive, nobody's that stupid, and nobody is that successful as a failure for their enemy. In human history, Barack Obama was, at best, a very dangerous player. At best. And we survived that. And finally, the leader of the U.S. government and the Egyptian government are back on the same page about what evil is, what terrorism is, and who's really behind it. That's good. Now get on your knees and pray for a very important meeting with Chinese leadership, because it might be a world war at stake. And at that point, well, kind of like how many people were talking about Social Security lockboxes after 9/11? You'll be talking about who was unmasking and revealing what, or what some jamoke at CNN tells you is or is not news. That's my final say. We'll get yours next. The phone number, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Next, Del Giorno, in for Dr. Savage. This is The Savage Nation.
Join The Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com.
Welcome back into the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Del Giorno in Nashville, Tennessee. Honored to be in for Dr. Savage again today. Don't forget to pick up his book, Trump's War, His Battle for America. Debuted at number one, still a bestseller. And for all of the top stories, because he's never really off, sign up for or sign into the Savage newsletter at michaelsavage.com. Obviously, we talked a lot about masking, what it is and why it's important. And somebody had to give the order and somebody had to unmask and somebody had to leak. And so while the left and the right want to make you believe this is a narrative war, no, it is actually an illegality and a fact, and somebody better find out whom gave the order, who did the unmasking, and then who leaked it. Now, we know Susan Rice did the unmasking, so I don't know why CNN's denying that. She's just saying, I didn't do any of the leaking. But there's a pattern here. Sure, it's a circumstantial case at this point, but these are the same players, and there's trending behavior. So just as they targeted the Tea Party after the 2010 midterm election, just as they targeted the Benghazi cover-up going into his re-election, now with Hillary, and they presumed that they would win, comes this. Now, the question was the unmasking and the leaking done for national security? Or was it done for political manipulation? I think there's more than enough to have a hearing with Susan Rice, and it should be done in a congressional hearing, not MSNBC. Because of the trending, because of the players, because of the lack of consequence that continues to be the result of each of these cases, because of the similar cover-ups and narrative control, and because of the dishonest middleman, the death of journalism. I want to end with this story. The National Center for Family and Marriage Research at Bowling Green State University set out to compare the last of the baby boomers, of which I am, the final year of the baby boomers. And so what they did was they compared 25 to 34-year-olds in 1980 to 25 to 34-year-olds in the latest numbers that they have, data from 2015. What'd they find? In 1980, two-thirds of 25 to 34-year-olds were already married. One in eight had already been married and divorced. In 2015, just two in five millennials were married, and only 7% had been divorced. Are young Americans killing marriage? What do these numbers really result in? What do they really tell us? Because there are so many factors, right? I mean, some of us would make the case, wait. After all, I am not, trust me, I had the worst 20s of any human being ever living. The nicest part about not living in Tulsa anymore is I don't know anybody that remembered me from then. I was a much different human being after 30. And so people always say, Wade, you'll know yourself. You'll be better prepared. I think that there are moral reasons for this. There is a decline in moral and Christianity in America. Therefore, marriage is viewed as a partnership and not a covenant. And covenant biblical marriage is different from cultural marriage. God's involved, and the two become one. And no matter how immature or mature you are, it works its way out, and you just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And you wake up like me someday, completely manipulated and controlled by a woman, and you don't mind. That was a joke. But I couldn't tell you where I end and my wife begins, or where she begins and I end. We have literally become one, outnumbered by our children and at war. But there is this issue of are millennials less socially mature because of all the social media interaction. Really is a fascinating poll. Are we waiting longer because, quite frankly, we're not as moral and we're having sex? So there's no rush. I think there's probably a lot of that. But isn't it amazing? This is going to be my final point. I promise there was one. Culture changes. And when people indoctrinate children in textbooks and in classrooms for one, two, three generations, when they take their cue not from Christ but from their favorite music star, or not from the Bible but from movies, or not from this but from reality shows or news shows, it doesn't take long to blink and two or three generations pass. And the next thing you know, it's not so much the state of marriage as what is marriage? And who decides? I'll see you next time on the Savage Nation.
Savage.